You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. McMurrin for a Monday edition of All Marine Radio right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Monday, that's right, for all it's worth, Monday, that's right. The big weekend though, and we'll talk about it. The biggest news is the head of ISIS killed Saturday night, American time. Early in the morning, Sunday, in Syria. And so, we'll talk about that a little bit. General Kelly in the news again says he warns the president about hiring a political chief of staff and that he needed an adult in the room, presumably like Kelly, that might give him advice on counterbalancing that which was so prevalent in his administration. And so, John Kelly in the news. All Marine Radio Post Traumatic Winning has a new video. Yeah, it's pretty cool, actually. So, it's on the YouTube channel right there. Yeah, go to All Marine Radio. And and check it out. Yeah, go to YouTube.
Welcome to my house.
It's my house.
Yeah, it's my house. And check out the video. It's about. I wanted to create something that was powerful and communicated kind of what post-traumatic wedding is. And so, let's talk about the al-Baghdadi raid. So first of all, what is the significance of that dude? Is he the operational commander of ISIS? The answer to that is no, he's not. And I think, for anybody who was interested anyway to pay and paid attention to the bin Laden event, I mean, he was not part of al-Qaeda anymore other than this symbolic, you know, mythical figure. And so, now, having said that, this thing's been being worked for months, evidently, based on a tip, right? Based on a tip that the Central Intelligence Agency had got months ago. And So according to the New York Times, the planning for the raid began this past summer when the CIA first got surprising information about Mr. al-Baghdadi's general location in a village deep inside a part of northwestern Syria. Now that's pretty interesting, right? So when you get your Google Earth map out, which is the beautiful thing about life these days, is that we got maps, we can go take a look. So you look at northwest Syria, okay? That's as far as you can get. That's as far as you can get away from the Americans. So some of the geography in this is pretty interesting. Okay, you look at where Damascus is in Syria. You look at where Iraq is. You look at where these guys took off from. You know, northwest Syria is a ways. Anyway. The information came after the arrest and interrogation of one of Mr. al-Baghdadi's wives and a courier. The couriers are important in all these hits, according to two American officials. Armed with that tip, the CIA, working closely with Iraqi and Kurdish intelligence officials in Iraq and Syria, identified more precisely his whereabouts and put spies in place. Spies, nice. To monitor his periodic movements. American officials said the Kurds continued to provide information to the CIA on Mr. Baghdadi's location even after Mr. Trump's decision to withdraw the American troops left the Syrian Kurds to confront the Turkish offensive alone. The Syrian and Iraqi Kurds, one official said, provided more intelligence for the raid than any single country. According to a Syrian engineer who spoke with villagers living near the raid site, Mr. al-Baghdadi had sought shelter in the home of Abu Muhammad Salama, a commander of another extremist group, Haras al-Din. The commander's fate in the raid and the precise nature of the relationship is not clear. As the Army's elite Delta Force unit began drawing up and rehearsing plans to conduct the mission to kill or capture the ISIS leader, they knew they faced formidable hurdles. The location was deep inside territory controlled by Al-Qaeda. The skies over that part of the country were controlled by Syria and Russia. The military called off the mission at least twice at the last minute. I'd be curious to know more about the coordination with the Russians, because as soon as you tell them, other people are going to know. And in theory, he may be warned. So that's how that works. So I'd be curious to know when they were notified, what they were told, blah, 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 blah. The final planning for the raid came together over the last two or three days. A senior administration official said that Mr. al-Baghdadi was about to move. Trying to locate him once he moves, right, and all the things they had. You know, so maybe it didn't meet all their thresholds where they would have liked them to have been. But if you're close on those thresholds, and again, God only knows what bits of information they had and then what pieces they didn't have. If you're close on that stuff, you know, you have to go, right? If you believe he's going to move. Military officials determined they had to go swiftly if Mr. al-Baghdadi moved again, blah, 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 blah. By Thursday and then Friday, Defense Secretary Mark Esper said the president had given the green light to proceed. Around midnight Sunday morning in the region, 5 p.m. Saturday in Washington, 8 American helicopters, primarily CH-47 Chinooks, took off from a military base in Erbil, Iraq. Now, you can look up where Erbil is, all right? So, go ahead, and if you have a map, you can see the point of origin of Erbil. So, it'll fly you into Iraq. And as you zoom out, you'll see all the beautiful places that are Iraq. So you're going from northern Iraq, right, into northwestern Syria, right? Area controlled by the Russians and the Syrian military. Flying low and fast to avoid detection, helicopters quickly cross the Syrian border. It's a 70-minute flight to the Berisha area just north of Idlib City, I-D-L-I-B. So plug that into your little browser, and you can get a view of what Idlib City is. Now, you've heard that name because it's been the center of fighting before. So you fly across that, and one of the things that will surprise you when you fly there, you know, is how close it is to Israel, right? So when you talk about northwest Syria, you're talking about, you know, land that very close to Israel, right? Anyway, so there's Idlib. So look it up. Just before the landing, now, mind you, what you'd have is you'd have every drone in the world over this thing. Every sensitive asset that you could get there would be there in support of this, you know, I mean, arguably HVT, high-value target number one. Okay, so, you know, every asset the American military had to bring to bear would have been brought to bear, right? Stuff being taken from other, you know, lower priorities, all surging to provide support. All right, just before the landings, helicopters and other warplanes began firing on the compound of buildings, providing cover for the commandos with the Delta Force and their military dogs to descend into the landing zone. Now, these are really special dogs, right? For those of you who don't know, you breach walls and the first thing through is the dog, and they know who to look for. Okay, they know who to look for. Having rehearsed this and done this and scouted this compound, I would say for a long, long time, and watched the pattern of movement, not only, you know, during the day, but at night, right? So at night is the time when you would fear something. So when you secure the compound, you know, booby traps get put in place. And I would say that, you know, we had a chance to watch that behavior, right? To listen to that behavior for a fair amount of time. Right. So this is not a chance engagement. Right. And the assets that the special operations community had are truly, truly amazing. Truly amazing. Right. So they bypassed all the entrances to the compound, right? Breaching the compound's walls, which allowed them to rush through and confront ISIS fighters. Those fighters, now mind you, you have aircraft overhead, drones overhead that are talking to Delta Force guys as they're on the ground running. So boom, you boom off the 47. And unlike the Bin Laden raid, right, you didn't have a helicopter event on the ground, which I'm sure they were, you know, went over and over and over and over and over again. And that doesn't mean that other things can't go wrong, but, you know, you just say, let's remember what we did last, what got done last time by SEAL Team 6, and let's try to avoid that stuff, and let's maybe even build in some of the planning stuff. So anyway, now they're in the compound, and there's guys overhead talking to them, telling them where people are running to, okay, who's in what building, what they've seen as they've walked through this. So they enter the compound. And again, if you're either friend or foe, there's the quick and the dead there, right? As they breach the walls, Arabist linguists, right, advise children and whoever else in the compound, right, to put your hands up and run, okay, in a certain direction. Later they cite that as saving the lives of 11 children. Well, we'll see. I guess we'll see about that. If anybody ever writes an article about this that has, that can get to the truth, he goes to an underground tunnel with Delta Force guys in pursuit. Supposedly he took 3 children in there. And again, instead of, you know, Delta Force members going into that tunnel, what would they do? They send a dog in there. And that's why, you know, You see there's some pretty famous pictures of dogs that are attached to, you know, I don't want to say commandos because I hate that word, but Delta Force soldiers. That's what they are. United States Army soldiers as assigned to Delta Force. But they're you know, attached, right? They're slung to the soldier, and here you have one of these dogs. And they are special dogs that, you know, will rip people's heads off. So that's what happens. And then evidently, he took his own life, according to every report I've seen. Two service members were slightly wounded. A military working dog was wounded when Baghdadi's suicide vest exploded. Right, his body was tested for DNA, as is, you know, we would do, and then his body was taken and buried at sea. 11 children were removed from the site and handed over to a woman in the area. And then the compound was destroyed. If you see pictures of it, right, there is nothing, literally nothing left of it. And I'd be curious to how that was done. Now, I will tell you, when this happens, and so let me tell you what happens when we pursue somebody. When we pursue somebody, they are isolated. They cannot use electronics. Okay. They have to be extremely careful who they come in contact with. So yeah, Baghdadi, he's a big fish, but he's been isolated for a long time because he's toxic. He's radioactive type toxic. That's how toxic he is. Right. And he's beyond radioactive because there's a reward out for him. And there's a lot of eyes and a lot of people who don't necessarily agree with what we're doing here. And I don't mean we Americans. I mean ISIS. Okay? And that's a lot of money that's on his head. And people know about it, too. So he's got to be kept out of view. And, right? Right? The walls have eyes. And so, my point, like bin Laden, he's isolated. Now, the value of what happens when this happens is, and it happens every time, that one of these guys gets whacked. And I don't mean bin Laden, I mean, certainly with bin Laden, certainly with, al-Baghdadi, but even with lesser guys, with regional guys, what happens is when they die, right, the electromagnetic spectrum lights up. So the real work, right, and the operational work, I would tell you, this, he's a symbolic figure, probably not so much associated with ISIS operations as those things are run by local commanders, because, again, he's toxic, he's radioactive, he's the symbolic leader of the movement. But, again, the value of what happens is we turn on every antenna we have to listen, and we start listening and looking for phones we've been looking for. And when they light up, right, then that's when other soft units get really busy. This guy just lit off here. This guy just lit off here. This guy just lit off here, right? And you're rolling this thing up because more and more lucrative targets. So the opportunity that Baghdadi presents is not himself, right? He's, you know, he's a symbolic leader. Right. Important, but symbolic relative to the operational side of all of this. When they break their OPSEC, when they begin to admit, it's our opportunity to roll them up. And now we're talking about operational leaders, local leaders. And then the other thing that happens is stuff is smuggled in to him. And there might be electronic devices, you know. And so what happens is, right, it's called sensitive site exploitation, SSE. And we have some pretty magical tools that get attached to computers, that get attached to cell phones, right? That stuff is transmitted immediately back to analysts, and there is a race in time, right? He called this phone number. This phone was near him in his bedroom, right? So was this phone. So was this laptop. you know, and they attach stuff to the computer and they suck it dry, and obviously they'll take the computer, but they need to move the data quickly, right? Two analysts that are standing by who are going through it, right? Looking for other actionable intelligence, right? To then action and roll this thing up. So really, that is just the first, is the opening act in a whole series of events that will hopefully happen based on electronic warfare. You know, so us listening to them talk on satellite phones, on whatever device they're using, right? And also the sensitive site exploitation data that comes from the site itself, right? The phones of his wives, in theory. The phones, I don't know that they would have phones, honestly. The phones of any other fighters that were killed there. Who are they talking to, right? Who are those people? Where are those people, right? And then it's on. And then subsequent raids happen. So really, that is a huge opportunity for the United States operationally in the region to set ISIS back a long ways by killing or capturing other leaders, right? That this hit will enable. So I think we should probably dial back the mission accomplished thing, because the other thing we see is they'll regenerate all these people. So don't become enamored with false narratives. The ISIS movement is not going away. This is a chance to land not only a thundering right hook to ISIS, but also a series of body blows, right? But again, they will regenerate all of that. In time, they will regenerate all of that. And that is the good and the bad. The Delta Force was on the ground for 2 hours. Just after 9 p.m. Washington time on Saturday, 4 hours after the helicopters had taken off, the president tweeted, "Something very big has happened." Americans went back. They say they went back the same route. I don't believe that. That's what they said. That's what they said. I don't believe that for a second. So huge news over the weekend. And I'll tell you the other thing. When you look at the New York Times has a picture. It's a Getty image. Here's the caption: "This site is in northwestern Syria, where the raid took place, shown in an aerial photo taken on Sunday." All right. So now, if you look at what's left is concrete dust. That's all that's left. It looks like moon dust. And chunks of concrete. You can see like the remnants of a wall. Barely at the bottom of the page. You can see different posts that were. But if you look in the in the top left corner of the picture, you can see, you know, the compound adjacent to it. It's a beautiful mansion. In what looks to be an orchard. Yep. This looks like to be like it's one of the outbuildings of that. So you have the mansion, and I say that because there's a Quonset hut across the road from where this is. And so there's already a truck there picking shit up. What the fuck? Mate, waste not, want not. But again, you talk about, I mean, absolutely annihilating something, right? Absolutely annihilating. I wonder what they did, what they used to do that, to create moon dust in the middle of Syria. So a huge congratulations to the professionalism of Delta Force. I will say this. I mean, our special operations community has taken a lot of hits over, I don't know, for a long time now, for years. Delta Force rarely is in the news. And I think that speaks to the professionalism of them as a group. I think it speaks to the way they source the members of Delta Force. I think it's a problem. And it's interesting. Later on in the week, Andy Milburn, who's a soft guy, will join me. And he wrote an article that talks about fixing the soft community. And, you know, and so anyway, in our conversations, Andy talks about when you're special from the time that you join and you don't join as a soldier. Now, I know some guys can't go directly, try to go directly to soft and things like that. But, you know, most of the people there earn it. When in the Navy, I think one of the problems is you don't come from the ranks of being a sailor, which I think would be better. You haven't had to go be a good sailor before you can test into the SEALs. And I think for a lot of, you know, most guys in the Army, that's where you go. You earn your stripes in the Army. You earn your stripes in Green Beret organizations and other units in order to get there. And so I think that's important, and I think that's good. And so, but let me just tell you, congratulations on the professionalism, the success, and the no Americans were it doesn't sound like we're seriously wounded, and hopefully keep our fingers crossed that everything works out for a military dog. They are not your normal, you know, security and bomb sniffing, explosive detecting dogs. These dogs are bred to kill people, and they're weapons as sure as anything. And so, what they do is they save lives. Instead of a soldier having to go down that hole, you had a dog go in there. And so, but again, a precision guided munition, just like any of the rest of them. And so congratulations to Delta Force. And then comes everything else, right? Which is frustrating. The the president doesn't share any information with the Democrats. All that is a thumb in the eye for what they're putting him through. And I don't know that that's not how the game gets played. Okay. And then it's like, well, now we're not going to criticize, you know, our precipitous, I would say, amateurish and sophomore-like pulling out of Syria and then saying, oh, wait a minute, now we're going to go back in, and now we got tanks in Syria, right? We're not going to criticize that because Baghdadi's dead. Well, the Baghdadi event is completely independent of all of that. But, you know, so politics, just when you don't think it can get worse, it doesn't even surprise you anymore, right? It does get worse. So, it's head shaking. And remember this, right? As we talk about the way we leave Syria and things like that. The problem with the way we leave Syria is vacuums and leaving vacuums and things like that. And that's leaving the whole issue of the Kurds aside as an ally and blah, blah, blah. When you hear Andy Milburn talk, he doesn't miss a whole lot of words. They lost 11,000 people. We lost 8 people in that fight. 8. And we essentially destroyed ISIS's physical caliphate. That means we outsourced it to them. And he makes no bones about his thoughts about leaving them in the lurch like that. And that there was far better ways to do what we did. And so, anyway, my point is vacuums. Al-Baghdadi is the product of a vacuum that Barack Obama left, right? when he declared victory and went home. Right? That which we only had to go back in and fight a much, much bigger fight. And so when you look at the issue to illustrate it, and what one of the things you hear Andy talk about is you talk about an optimum use of less than 100 special forces soldiers, right, that were currently in Syria, right? It's a pretty highly leveraged investment. We're not talking divisions that are in Germany, Japan, and Korea. We're talking onesies and twosies, and with that you have a say in the region, and we then unass that. Now the problem with when you unass is, do you leave a vacuum? And if you leave a vacuum, I can tell you with certainty, something bad is going to grow in there. The bad forces that exist on this planet will find it, right? They will brew a toxic cocktail, and then they will begin serving it. And then ultimately, right, the United States, because of our investment in Iraq, right, will feel the need to go back there in a much larger way than had we sustained it. Vacuums are bad. Vacuums are bad. So, anyway, yeah, good morning to you with that all said. But, no, the biggest thing is congratulations to the soldiers of Delta Force. Extremely proud when these kind of things happen and the United States military, you know, puts its best foot forward, conducts operations that literally nobody on the planet could conduct and does them in such a way, very little. I mean, if you look at the picture in New York Times, right, if you look at the picture of the compound, and that thing is absolutely annihilated. And if you look at the compound next to it, I mean, that the foundation next door might have some cracks because of all the explosions that went off, but the area around it is pristine. Yeah. I mean, some idea of the precision, not only the precision, but also the destructive force that can be brought to bear when appropriate. So anyway, a huge congratulations, and thank God that everybody got through that. And, have long admired the professionalism of Delta Force and what they do. So congratulations to them. And again, just know this, that guy was already isolated. He's a charismatic figure like Osama bin Laden was. Now, what happens in the aftermath? Do they surge operations to show people? And I'll tell you what, and honestly, the little I saw the president crowing and talking shit, doesn't sit well with me. I think what's appropriate for the president of the United States is to walk out, talk about the operation that was conducted, right? Laud the United States military, and in particular, everybody from the CIA to the Syrian intelligence assets, to Delta Force, who participated in the mission, and then turn around and walk away, right? Shit talking only, right, gives them greater incentive to do more damage. I don't know that that ought to be the president's focus. But Donald Trump, unlike any president we've ever seen. So, with all that said, good morning to you, United States Marine Corps band makes this Monday official. Get on the road later on today. Get in the airways, actually. Head to Denver and then off to the Air Force Academy. And then from the Air Force Academy, head to Quantico and the Cornerstone course, where regimental and battalion commanders and sergeant majors assigned to those commands go. So do that. And hopefully have some meetings in D.C. And then up to Minnesota to speak at the Minnesota State University Mankato on Tuesday. If you know anybody in the region, please let them know that that's going to happen, and they're more than welcome to attend. So, on a Monday, good morning to you. a quick email. Mac, I saw this kind of as a crowning moment. I did not see it as the door opening for much, much broader operations. Interesting. Yeah, honestly, when these things happen, they are the beginning of, and I'll tell you right now, I mean, you're not hearing about it, but there's operations going on right now where American Special Forces units are locating and tracking and either cordoning and yoking or killing and capturing somebody. And yoking means to grab them, right? So yeah, it is the beginning of a whole series of events, you know, that will go on for, you know, weeks and again, every time you find another one of these guys, right, the same thing happens, you know? And so hopefully if you're lucky, right, you're overwhelmed with targets, right? And you're bringing other units, right? And so the level of complexity of the operations, for instance, so it is very much a doorway if it goes right and if it goes well. And then every person that you find like that, that you find that's not expecting it, right, who has their electronic devices on it, who now those electronic devices link, right, get linked you to somebody else's cell phone, and he's on his cell phone right now and he's right there, right? All right, stand by. Right, park a drone over him, keep him in sight, and we'll get to him within a few hours. And that's, I mean, you talk about, I mean, the special operations community right now is in overdrive, right? Is in overdrive. So, yeah, just the way it is. The other thing that I'll talk about when we get through the weather and whatnot is the way these things, you have to have, if something goes wrong, you have to have more units in the air, in the region, right? So where the units, in the Med, so the coast is, right, you're flying hours from Iraq. I mean, over an hour from Iraq, right? The Mediterranean is, let's see, from Idlib, to the coast is maybe 40 miles. Yeah, 43 miles off the coast of the Mediterranean. So were there, you know, American naval assets off the coast that had closed with supporting distance to provide QRF, to provide more aviation support or whatever, right? And again, but to me, the other interesting part of this is, what did we tell the Russians? What did we tell the Turks, right? And, you know, interestingly enough, you haven't heard Mr. Putin say anything. Right. And if he had a hand in this, that he was told beforehand, what is that? You know, I believe he would have said something. Same thing. Mr. Erdogan has been relatively silent on all of this. So that's kind of an interesting part of all this. So, this is a no brainer. This is dedicated to, from the Central Intelligence operatives who first got wind of this to the Syrian Kurds and Iraqi Kurds who helped with this, and to everybody at Special Operations Command, at Central Command, and ultimately the soldiers of Delta Force and the pilots of those Chinooks that whooped it on the other night. Well done, boys and girls. Congratulations.
We have fought. You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
If you don't love your Marines, then you really ought to get up. The only reason I stuck around that little paying outfit 40 years is for the absolute pleasure of serving alongside cocky, rambunctious, disciplined, selfless, unbelievably selfless young Marines. And the infantry got its name, infantry, young soldier. And I enjoyed being around them. And in the military, it's all about the team. And so if you don't know the team players beyond simply their rank and last name, you don't care about deeply. I mean, just go up to Bethesda anytime you want to see the cost of war and see the ranks on the rooms that you're walking into. Lance Corporal here, Lance Corporal there, CFC here, Sergeant there, Lieutenant. If you don't care about these guys, don't expect them to care about what's important to you. They're putting their lives on the line.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah. He goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Speaking of winning, man, my 49ers have gone from the most suck-ass football team in the NFL to one of the two best. And another kid they got from Ohio State University that's a pretty amazing football player. A defensive lineman by the name of Nick Bosa. Wow. Anyway, we'll check the weather right now. Currently sunny and 64 in Quantico, where I'm headed. Sunny and 76 at Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune. It's cold out in 29 Palms. It is sunny and 51 out in 29 Palms. At Camp Pendleton, sunny and 56. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy in 71. Okinawa, dark clear in 76 in the Alambre province, which is west of where the special operations helicopters took off from. Erbil is northeast of Alambre. It is clear, dark in 77 in Ramadi. In Lashkargah in the Helmand province, it is cloudy, dark in 71 degrees. So, winter coming to the planet, I guess, unless you're in Australia. Currently at the home of All Marine Radio, it is sunny in 64. Looking for a high of 80 today. We had temperatures, I want to say it was 89 in my house at 6 o'clock on Friday night. Yeah, it was warm. Saturday, not so warm, and then yesterday, pretty cool. Pretty mild. Looking for sun and a high of 80 degrees today. Looking for sun and 72 tomorrow, and as we head towards Halloween, sun and 75. That is a look at your weather. We'll take a break. More of all, I got a few email questions that we'll get to. Here's one. Mac, how do you know so much about these? Well, after I got done working for General Mattis, I worked with what's known as current operations. And current operations is divided into two sections. So when you do operations, right, you're either part of current operations or you're a part of plans, right? Plans works on stuff that's more than 96 hours out. So, and they may be planning stuff for months, you know, as this thing was. The planners are working on that. At some point, you have a crosswalk brief, and the planners come in, and all the current operations people who are working stuff that's happening now or will happen tomorrow, 48 hours, 72. So inside the window of 96 becomes current operations. So I, after I went to work for General Mattis, after he left and General Natonsky took over the division, I went to work current operations for the 1st Marine Division. And so did that through Al-Fajr, which is the Second Battle of Fallujah. So you worked the problems that were happening right now every day, from convoys being ambushed to providing security for beer and rum that was going to be supplied to Marines and soldiers after the Battle of Al-Fajr, Second Battle of Fallujah was fought. General Natonsky said, hey, Marine Corps order, man. We're going to get beer to those guys and rum to them. And there was some great pictures of Army units that took pictures and said, we'll fight with you guys anytime. Special dispensation lifted so that people could consume a beer and have a shot of rum. Yada, yada, yada. So all of that. And in 2006, 2005, Colonel Larry Nicholson, who I'd met in 2004, who got wounded, I told that story, but he takes over the 1st Marine Regiment. He's supposed to lead it in the Second Battle of Fallujah. He takes over at 8 in the morning from Colonel Tulin at the time, who later will become, both he and Nicholson will become lieutenant generals. And he will, be wounded that very day as a rocket explodes, comes through an opening in the masonry wall of the palace that his headquarters was in, killing the communications officer and seriously wounding Colonel Nicholson. Anyway, well, he was going back. Now as the commander of the 5th Marine Regiment, after he had recovered from his wounds. And he called me, said, hey, I need an adult and to work at night, and, you know, would you go to Fallujah with me? And I said, well, if you need me, I'll go. So I went there, and I worked at night, and what I did every night was these special operations events. We were searching for somebody at the time. A guy named Zarqawi, if you remember him, AMZ. And so we had all these, electronic warfare assets over the Alambre area. And so on a nightly basis, I mean, some nights it was crazy. The number of special operations units that would be coming into our battle space looking to either kill or capture him or kill or capture somebody that they thought was related to him by some intelligence they got from him or whatever they were doing. And then, and this is what we'll talk about. I'll explain to you some of the things that have to happen when you put up a when you go to conduct one of those operations. But that's how, I mean, that's how I, so for 7 months is what I did every night was babysit, make sure that we could provide quick reaction forces, that the quick reaction force was, you know, had a comm link and had comm checks with the soft unit, you know, and then whatever problems arose, you start working those too. So, I have no small amount of, and that's how I have my opinions of different soft units. I worked with them every night for months. Anyway, we'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on a Monday edition, Tuesday coming to you tomorrow from Colorado Springs, and right here on your home for it, I think. The All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you. And we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good,
but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I want to walk you to a cold, bitter ocean and feel the sting of letting go of all hope and self in me. Of this heartbreak.
Here's another email. Mac, the president said that it was like watching a movie without the sound. Is that true? Well, not really. Well, yes and no. I mean, the cinematography isn't great. You're watching drone footage. You know, and really from an operational perspective, what you're looking at is, you know, are things going right? Are there any surprises? And one of the great... You know, for instance, when you conduct an operation like this, you know, and they put it together for such a long period of time, they've had people watching this compound, you know, for a long time, and they know people who come in and out of that thing, right, by the vehicles that they drive, by you know, their build, and so if you looked at the information they had relative to this operation, you'd be blown away. And so what that allows in the execution of it is that once we isolate it, right, it's unless we crash a helicopter, unless something unforeseen happens, right? And things do happen, right? But as long as it's manageable, it's like, you know, this radio, you know, net went out, so we had to do this. And all that stuff is manageable and planned for, right? But unless something goes catastrophically wrong, right, this thing should get prosecuted, you know, the way that you saw this thing done. And again, the people, the men and women who are part of Delta Force and our soft community, you know, at that level, they're gifted. They're athletes, and they have the ability to stay calm, and they have incredible amount of experience. And so when you plan that, when you combine that with the planning and then the assets that are parked overhead, for instance, right, it's a two-hour flight, right? So you got to be able to tank. Those CH-47s have to go someplace, right? They're not going to shut down on the ground. Where do they go? What do they do? Right? Who refuels them? So there's got to be a FARP or aerial refueling that's got to be done someplace, right? You have to have, you know, 2 hours of time on the ground's got to be covered by, you know, flights of aviation assets, multiple flights. So they will check on and off. You know, somebody like F-18 man will control them. He'll pull from a stack of aircraft that are near a tanker, and all they're doing is tanking and standing by with a certain package overhead. You have ISR assets, all the drones and things like that, with cameras, with electronic warfare capabilities. Some are shooters, some are not. All that goes into this. So, but my point is this: when you have this kind of time to plan, sometimes for instance, in theory, you could find out it's him. And then you have to make a decision, do we go get him right now? And in that case, that thing is being planned as we go, right? As we go. Now, we've done it a bunch. We know how to do it, but nonetheless, it's being planned on the fly. But because he's such a high-value target, you might assume that risk. But this was not planned like that. And so the level of complexity, all the different pieces that were, you know, that were done, And you have to have a, you know, you have to have, so there might have been 70 guys that were a part of this, right? Well, there might have been another 70 or another 140 that were part of a, what's known as the QRF, the Quick Reaction Force, that's standing by, maybe off the coast, maybe in helicopters that are circling someplace, you know, circling for a couple hours, you know, waiting, you know, just for the purpose of, if they need us, we'll go. And then, you know, if things go right, they don't need you. There might be other things that are going to come booming in. Once the initial raid goes in, right, then, you know, we have support people that are going to land, sensitive site exploitation people, you know, medics would be embedded in the first part of it. But, you know, there's a whole suite that goes with it. There's a whole suite in addition to all the assets. So again, yeah, that's how I learned. And I hadn't really, I'd met special ops guys in Ramadi in 2004. And because I worked for General Mattis, you know, they would be around. And so I got to know them, and good guys and whatnot. And then, but I really learned about it when it became my job on a nightly basis to support what they did, and able to watch them and do their thing. And so they're a pretty interesting, pretty professional group. And again, nobody gets higher marks than Delta Force. Nobody gets higher marks than Delta Force. Let me go over some news headlines. So it's not really like a movie. It's not, although you're watching, you know, video at night, and, you know, you're essentially watching thermal video, watching people move around. And really what you're looking for is, you know, the guys who planned it, and the planners and the guys who commanded it are watching it saying, okay, that guy's going to die right about now. Poof, he's dead. Right. Okay. This guy should run out of there because they've been watching him, right? This guy, there should be some event, right, in that hallway in the next few minutes. You know, and then boom, it happens, and you see all the right things, and you're going through this thing, and then you're looking for him, right? You're looking for him. So anyway, so that's how that would happen. So not so much a movie, right? Unless you watch really crappy movies, poorly filmed movies. The top five stories in the early bird, and then Alex Hollings, we recorded something before this happened, so he won't be commenting on this, but you'll hear him this morning. As I get ready to fly out. Top story, Trump says al-Baghdadi died like a dog in a U.S. commando raid in Syria. Again, I don't think any of that is necessary. Number two, U.S. sends forces to protect the Syrian oil fields. Wait a minute, I thought we were leaving. Now we're there in a heavier way with more people there, and maybe we're going to take the oil because, I mean, I don't know. I find it very discouraging. And not only, you know, what I see from the president, but, I mean, equally as discouraging what you see across the political spectrum, right? Just, I think, ridiculous sometimes. And you know what? Unworthy of the nation. Three, headline, Air Force, Trump resort stays, broke no rules but raised public perception dilemma. The Air Force has concluded scores of overnight stays at President Donald Trump's seaside resort in Scotland did not violate any rules, but did raise questions about the public perception of funneling taxpayer funds to a property owned by the commander-in-chief. Then there's an article in Military Times about the people that writes Priebus, who had run the Republican Party and became an ensign in the U.S. Navy Reserve. The people that he beat out. And there's another, it kind of an interesting story. This is in Air Force Times. The Air Force will move to a new system of indefinite enlistment for airmen with at least 12 years of service on November 18th. Service officials confirmed Friday after a leaked memo appeared online on Wednesday. So that's kind of interesting. In a day and age where, you know, we don't want to help out with retirement, and we're very skittish about people having an open-ended commitment, because once you reach sanctuary, you've got to be allowed to retire, yada, 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 right? All of that. Syria-Turkey headlines. One, Russia calls U.S. move to protect Syrian oil banditry. Yeah, it's straight up something the Russians would do, right? Bandit, that's a bad word in Russian. Russia says it sent hundreds of additional troops to Syria. Nice to know. Syria gives PSYOP, civil affairs people, sets and reps, right, in practice. The special ops community talked about the PSYOP's effort. How Trump gabbed too much about the ISIS raid. You know, it's really what he does. That's in Politico. I'm not sure. Politico leans left or right. U.S. troops staying behind in Syria could face threats from the Assad regime. So kind of interesting. We went from a posture in which we were, you know, advising to now we have tanks on the ground. So what do we just do? What do we do? And this article from Reuters is really the one. And then there's articles. I'll just read you the headlines. I've already mentioned this stuff, right? But Baghdadi is dead, but ISIS remains emboldened since Trump's drawdown. From the Associated Press, Islamic State leader al-Baghdadi leaves a legacy of terror. And also from the Associated Press, al-Baghdadi's death is a blow, but ISIS has survived other losses. And this is an exclusive, according to Reuters. Baghdadi's aid was key to his capture, Iraqi intelligence sources. In their long hunt for Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, Iraqi intelligence teams secured a break in February of 2018 after one of the Islamic State leader's top aides gave them information on how he escaped captures for so many years. Baghdadi would sometimes hold strategy talks with his commanders in moving minibuses packed with vegetables in order to avoid detection. Ismail al-Ethawi, E-T-H-A-W-I, told officials after he was arrested by Turkish authorities and handed over to the Iraqis. Ethawi gave valuable information which helped the Iraqi multi-service agencies team complete the missing pieces of the puzzle of al-Baghdadi's movements and places he used to hide. Ethawi gave us details on five men, including him, whom were meeting Baghdadi in Syria, and the different locations they used. Turning militant such as Ethawi was critical to the agents trying to track Baghdadi. Ethawi holds a PhD in Islamic sciences, was considered by Iraqi intelligence officials to be one of the leader's top five aides. He joined al-Qaeda in 2006, was arrested by U.S. forces in 2008, and was jailed for 4 years. Baghdadi later tasked Ethawi with key roles such as delivering religious instructions and selection of Islamic State commanders. After the group largely collapsed in 2017, Ethawi fled to Syria with his Syrian wife. Another turning point came earlier this year during a joint operation in which U.S., Turkish, and Iraqi intelligence agents captured senior Islamic State leaders, including four Iraqis and one Syrian. Quote, they gave us all the locations where they were meeting with al-Baghdadi inside Syria, and we decided to coordinate with the CIA to deploy more sources inside the areas, said one Iraqi official. In mid-2019, we managed to locate Idlib as the place where Baghdadi was moving from village to village with his family and three close aides. Informants in Syria then spotted an Iraqi man wearing a checkered headdress in an Idlib marketplace and recognized him from photographs. It was Ethawi, they said, and they followed him to the home where Baghdadi was staying. We passed the details to the CIA, and they used a satellite and drones to watch the location for the past 5 months. Baghdadi was also on the run from local enemies in Syria. Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, the group formerly known as as the Nusra Front, and which dominates Idlib, had been mounting its own search for Baghdadi after receiving information he was in the area. The Nusra Front and the Islamic State were rivals who fought bloody battles against each other in the Syrian war. The Nusra Front, founded by Abu Muhammad al-Golani, was al-Qaeda's official affiliate in Syria until it broke away from the Global Jihadist Network in 2016. According to the Idlib commander, Hayat Dirar al-Sham recently captured another aide to Baghdadi known as Abu Suleiman al-Kahadi, one of three men seen sitting along Baghdadi in his last video message. The capture of Kaladi was the key in the search for Baghdadi, the commander said. Baghdadi may have concluded that hiding in Idlib was his best hope after the Islamic State was wiped out in Iraq and Syria. He could have blended in with lax security and checkpoints operated by armed groups that rarely search vehicles, increasing his chances for survival. He said Baghdadi was believed to have been in Idlib for about 6 months, and that his main reason for being there was to try to hide. But he said Baghdadi was still seen as a major threat because his presence would have attracted supporters in an area where the Islamic State has sleeper cells. So interesting how at least some of the information that's come out about the way that event went down. All right. Hold on. Let me give you a few shithole weather updates since I forgot previous to this. From Webster, Massachusetts. Current conditions, 64 degrees Fahrenheit, high of 56 degrees today expected, winds out of the north at 8 miles an hour, cloudy, drizzle, mist, rain, repeat daily until Friday evening. Chris from Webster. The, let's see, from Beverly in Saskatchewan. Good morning from Churchbridge, 200 miles north of Minot. Scattered flurries all day. Currently 14 degrees Fahrenheit above zero. Winds are out of the east at 5. Afternoon high at 25. Winds out of the northwest at 10. Minot's overcast at 23. Winds are out of the southwest at 12. Afternoon mix of sun and clouds. Winds are will be out of the northwest at 19. Little bit brisk up there in case you haven't noticed. And from western Pennsylvania, currently in Pleasantville where Nancy lives, where the deer and the outdoorsmen from Erie, Pennsylvania, and everywhere in the tri-state area, Pennsylvania, New York, Ohio, come out to play. It's partly cloudy, 46 degrees on the way to 63. Whoa, 63 degrees in western Pennsylvania. That's pretty nice. Winds are out of the south at 3. Make it a great one. That is a look at your weather here on a Monday morning. We'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here. And Alex Holland going to join us in something we recorded on Friday. So with apologies, he won't comment on the most recent news. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one.
you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.